mean, Bitcoin, I think in the next decades is going to become the up there global reserve asset with treasuries and dollars and gold and everything. It will probably one day be tens of trillions of dollars, maybe 80 to 100 trillion dollar market cap, whatever it is. But still, not everybody's a Bitcoiner, and all the influential people and powerful people believe the same things that we believe. And oh, Bitcoin is a black hole that sucks all assets in the world into it. It's going to collapse the bond market, all that stuff. It sounds cool. It's a great soundbite, but I mean, I don't think that we're ever going to get into a world of hyper Bitcoinization that, you know, the fairy tale sort of like everything is going to be priced in sats and there's going to be no fiat currencies. There will be no bond market.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Brad Mills in the house. But first, Brad, we're coming to you today. There's been a little bit of a dip here. We've had a lot going on this year. We've had traditional finance come in with 11 spot Bitcoin ETFs in the US. So I got to ask you, are you worried a little bit that because traditional finance is in, they were dumping in a bunch of money and now they're pulling it all out? Like, how are you viewing this dip?
I haven't really actually been paying too much attention to the short-term price action because I've been kind of, the longer I'm in Bitcoin, the more that I get confidence in the inevitability of Bitcoin. And you know, before I used to be worried about things like Bitcoin Cash and Roger Ver owning Bitcoin.com and that was going to suck mind share away from Bitcoin. And then I was worried about Ethereum going to suck all the developer mind share away and all these stablecoin use cases and all this DeFi stuff and the VCs and the Silicon Valley and all that stuff was going to suck mind share from Bitcoin. And I kind of like get more and more confident in just the inevitability of Bitcoin and realizing that there's not that much that we can do to change the trajectory of Bitcoin's domination of the global reserve asset world over the next couple decades. So, like, what does it do for my own sanity and health and happiness to focus on the price so much? So really, I do look at like these short-term price action movements now as like opportunities for people to come in. And I kind of look at it like another shuttle just arrived at the station for a whole bunch of new people to jump on the shuttle to the lifeboat, get off the Titanic or whatever your analogy of the du jour is. But I do think that it's good actually to see the price come down because if it rips too fast and too far ahead of people, then I actually feel worse about like the people that didn't get on the shuttle yet. And yeah, it sucks for people who bought like a month ago, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, whatever, if they're focused on the short-term price action. But think about the 95% or more of the people in the world that don't even have any Bitcoin, and the 99.9% of the people in the world, including probably yourself and me, who don't have enough Bitcoin yet. So, you know, it's a good opportunity. And it does kind of take a long time for you to develop that. I don't know if that's a skill or just a callus, you know? I mean, I've been working out a lot lately. I got these calluses on my hands. So I'm training my strong hands for hodling Bitcoin through all these dips. And I suggest everybody do that as well. You got to get the strength to build your citadel mentally as well as financially.
No, 100%. And I agree with you. I think the longer that you're in Bitcoin, the more you see these dips as an opportunity opposed to something as a negative. But I've heard you speak on a few podcasts about how you used to worry about something that would be an issue for Bitcoin. But in the end, you've come to the conclusion that Bitcoin is inevitable. And I think everybody kind of in the space gets to that point at some point in time. But is there like, with everything going on, is there I guess like a short-term worry that you have of like, whether it's the privacy attacks that we're seeing on Bitcoin in the US or in some other place that you think that, I mean, maybe could slow it down a little bit? Or do you think, in the end, everything is good for Bitcoin?
Well, again, like for years, I was steeped in the day-to-day news and the future timeline of what possible timeline are we going into here of government action, competition, macro war, you know, Great Depression 2.0, you know, this time with Netflix or whatever. You know, I was steeped in all that stuff, and I I realized, okay, maybe it was beneficial for me to learn so much about how the banking system actually works and about Bitcoin's competitors and really dive deep into the incentives that drive the different participants in crypto, because there's a lot of, like, if you become like a kind of activist Bitcoiner, which most of us came from, like Ron Paul or libertarianism or Austrian economics or, you know, and the Fed, sound money, gold, whatever, you kind of come to Bitcoin as like a bit of an activist. And that comes in the form of Bitcoin maximalism typically. And some people take that to Bitcoin extremism, and they become like extremely defensive and protective of Bitcoin, the Bitcoin brand, like the short-term stuff. And that caused me to like deep dive into like psychology and stuff. Like I started to read like René Girard's books on mimetic theory and things like that. So I mean, I can't say that not being so short-term focused and activity bias focused for years of my life didn't benefit me, because I learned a lot. I mean, I learned all the foundational things about human incentives and the financial markets and the macro markets and the global like picture of power struggles and history of money and all these things that when you think about it all so much and then you put Bitcoin in perspective of all those things, you kind of do really think like, okay, it's happened. It's already won. Bitcoin has kind of already won, and it's just now a matter of like humanity coming to grips with Bitcoin is here and Bitcoin is not going to be able to be stopped. And like, even with I just watched recently Death Athletic, I think it was called, the documentary, because I'm on the film Bitcoin Film Fest panel, and it was the documentary all about Cody Wilson and the, you know, fight that he had with the US government over ghost guns or whatever, the ability to upload 3D documents, like data basically for the 3D printed guns. And then, you know, Julian Assange just got released and all this stuff. So even in that movie about the ghost guns, I mean, it was a similar type of thing where it was a battle for privacy, a battle for free speech. And in the end, like, the government lost that case and they settled with him and he won. And I didn't realize that. You know, I kind of stopped paying attention. I just assumed like all these negative things, oh, the government's, you know, the long arm of the law, and they don't, you know, care about the rules or whatever. But I guess the US court system actually kind of like still works in some ways. And a lot of cases, what happens, same thing that happened with the cypherpunks back in the day when they were battling over the free speech. The government just kind of gives up on the case, because if it goes too far and then a precedent is made, they realize it's going to be extremely bad for all the mass surveillance and everything that they're doing that's unconstitutional. So a lot of times when people get passionate enough about something like Bitcoin and they start taking it to the higher courts, the government just folds, because they're going to get ruled against them. And that's not good for them. So I'm actually kind of, yeah, I kind of don't pay too much attention anymore to the short term because of all the things I've learned and the confidence I've kind of gotten over learning a lot about monetary history and human incentives and stuff, and just seeing Bitcoin just winning constantly. And like, yeah, it sucks to see the price volatility, but like Michael Saylor says, you can have vitality through volatility, or you can have stagnation through stability. And so, I mean, I'd rather have the vitality. So you got to take the volatility with the vitality.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. And yeah, I think a big thing that I take away from what you were just talking about there is how much you just sat back and like you really dug deep and learned, which makes me like kind of question about the current educational system and kind of how you view that, right? I mean, we are almost programmed to go to school, right? K through 12 grade, you know, you go, you do your homework, you just got to learn whatever it is for that specific test. Then majority of time you forget it, you don't really put a lot of those things into action. And then a lot of people think either after high school or college or whatever it is, the learning stops. And you know, because of that, I think a lot of people don't really question various things. You know, they get kind of programmed into that. So you know, I guess How would you see like the us getting onto like Bitcoin and a Bitcoin standard kind of revolutionizing almost the incentive structure for you know, the traditional education system in that sense of things?
Oh man, I don't know. That's a tough one because it's, you know, the longer I've kind of learned about human behaviors and monetary history and things like that, the more I kind of like lose a little bit of faith in the mass of people that live on this planet, especially kind of like seeing COVID and the vaccine passports and vaccine mandates and stuff and people just rolling over on that and the Canadian trucker convoy, all that stuff. Like a lot of my friends were just totally fine with having financial repression in Canada. And they actually hook, line, and sinker believed that the truckers were alt-right Trumpists and all this stuff. So people just generally are propagandized too heavily. And it's a war for control over the mass of people. And the education system, as long as the money system is still going, the fiat money system, the education system is just the perfect tool to keep people sleeping and keep people in line and not asking too many questions. And, you know, the political system, the same thing. So all these systems we have, it seems like it's all part and parcel with don't look behind the curtain at the money, at the politics, at the education. And I, you know, a lot of Bitcoin maximalists or, you know, even myself, like when you become a Bitcoiner and then you become a hardcore Bitcoiner and then you kind of get radicalized a little bit and become a maximalist and then you're like an activist online and all this stuff, you start to kind of believe some of the tropes and you start to kind of think like, oh, Bitcoin fixes this and Bitcoin is going to destroy fiat and Bitcoin is going to fix everything and all this stuff. But you know, the bond market is going to completely go away and the Bitcoin is a black hole that sucks everything in. Like it's some of the people who say these things like Trace Mayer and others, like I think that they know that they're just kind of like saying these things as without having to do a half an hour explanation of what they really mean. Like, oh, Bitcoin is a black hole that sucks all assets in the world into it. It's going to collapse the bond market, all that stuff. It sounds cool. It's a great soundbite, but I mean, I don't think that we're ever going to get into a world of hyper Bitcoinization that, you know, the fairy tale sort of like everything is going to be priced in sats and there's going to be no fiat currencies. There will be no bond market. The education system will be fixed. I mean, I love Tomer Strohlite's documentaries and writing and stuff like that. It's great fiction fantasy for Bitcoiners. But I think like through learning a lot about the depression and like the continental dollar times of the, you know, the colonies in the 1700s and just like any kind of monetary history, you go back and you look at like, okay, there was always banks issuing their own money. There was always money lenders having their own sort of forms of credit. There's always wars fought over control of territory resources. So the idea that like, just because we've created the potentially only money that's ever existed in the world, Bitcoin is like the perfect form of monetary technology that's ever been created by man or discovered by us, just because this exists and maybe the AGIs are going to start using it as their money, whatever, doesn't mean that like there's a lot of people out there that are still going to want to have power and control and redistribute wealth. And that's what like the powerful do. They control and they redistribute wealth. And as long as you have an education system that pays regular adults that are just like you and me to be authorities for children, so that the children think, oh, this is my teacher, this is my principal, this person knows everything about knowledge, and so I should listen to them. And then they have no clue. They're not even doing their taxes right. And they're paid by the state to teach these things. They don't even understand what they're teaching. So as long as we have a fiat money system, and we have people who are suffering from high costs and inflation, and they're just grateful to have a job, even if the job is teaching kids propaganda. Jeez, it's like what's going to have to change for Bitcoin to fix that? It's kind of like a Herculean task that I don't really think will ever happen. I think that the best we can do is like change ourselves and the family and friend groups around us, be an influence to continue to be more relevant in the conversation. So you got people like yourself and Julian Figueroa with the, you know, Kinetic Finance. They got their new channel Base. It's like, more and more Bitcoiners are going to keep weighing in on these conversations, and we're going to have more relevance and more influence. And the more that we become successful and sovereign and all those beautiful things, the more that it's going to probably spread. But I can't see it being like a systemic upgrade to the global operating system, because there's a lot of gatekeepers there to prevent these ideas from really spreading too far. And if it does, there's like a lot of people who will lose, like probably billions of people will lose on that deal.
Yeah, so it seems like, you know, you're kind of diving into more of like the human psychology aspect of it, which I think is really interesting. Because yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's kind of two coins to this, right? I mean, humans are always going to want to be, you know, powerful, richer, all that kind of stuff, like an ego-driven kind of world. And then the fiat system also encourages chaos, whether it's, you know, COVID, a war, something like that. It incentivizes that, because somebody in the end is always going to profit off of that, whether it's defense companies, biopharmaceutical companies, all that kind of stuff. So I guess in this newer Bitcoin world, when we get to that point, because, you know, Bitcoin is inevitable, you don't think that this stuff would ever go away in a sense? Or do you think it would be less frequent? Like, how do you see that playing out? Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full-on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick, sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code GREENCANDLE for 15% off. They're helping power this show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well, if you could see it here. They've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right, back to the show.
I mean, I don't think, man, because you think about like Elon Musk as an example of the example of capitalism versus government top-down control and bloated, inefficient crap, right? Elon Musk came from the free market system, and using the free market, he was able to do things the government was not able to do, like create reusable rockets and actually get people to want to adopt electric vehicles. And so like you can look at somebody like Elon Musk as the example of like, oh, in a free market libertarian society, you can see that the right person that has, you know, skin in the game will make better decisions and they will probably be more effective. And, you know, even looking at him as an example of somebody on that side of this sort of philosophical concept of like top-down control versus bottom-up, you know, free market stuff, Elon doesn't really get it. He's promoting Dogecoin, and like he's kind of nihilistic about the idea of money anyways. So he believes, I heard him talk in a space with Preston Pysh, and I think it was Catherine or from ARK. What's her name again?
Kathy Wood.
Yeah, Kathy Wood. Jack Mallers was there. And somebody asked him a question about money or whatever. And in the past, before he came out as kind of being positive towards Bitcoin, he had hinted in like interviews that, you know, he would question what money is when people would ask him about financing or whatever. He'd say, well, money is just an entry in a database, and money is like an entropy system, and the fiat money system is like a high entropy way to transfer value with lots of leaks in it and an inefficient way to do money, but it's what works. And then like later on, he came out being supportive of Bitcoin, and then obviously didn't put in the work, and also then thought, oh, the Dogecoin logo is really fun. That I guess if Bitcoin can be money, Dogecoin's better money because it's funny. And, you know, but he actually believes those things, that he just this kind of like shallow view of what Bitcoin really is. He thinks, oh, well, Dogecoin has faster transactions per second, and, you know, it's got more more bigger block size or whatever. So he's like, oh, it's better. And he thinks about money on that space. I forget who asked him about it again, but he kind of got annoyed and said, I don't want to talk about annoying Bitcoin questions. And he said that like money, Bitcoin is not, I feel like this is what I took from it anyways. Maybe it wasn't his exact words, but the sort of perspective I got from him was that he feels like Bitcoin is not really that important, because if you had everybody lived on an island and money is just a way for you to get people to like work and distribute resources, then there would be no need for something like Bitcoin, because you could use anything. You could use whatever people chose to use as money. And really money in the end is just a way to get people to work and, you know, pay for their labor and allocate labor is kind of the way he was looking at it. So if you think about like, he's one of the like bastions of this idea of the free market and capitalism and whatever. And he doesn't even think of it from, he's like so out of touch, he doesn't think about it from the perspective of that worker on the island who's like, actually, you know, the way he thinks about it is the way that governments think about it and the way that Keynesians think about it. And the way that like Bitcoiners think about it is that it's the worker that needs to store his value, and that using the wrong instrument to store his value and get paid for his labor creates a problem of not being able to hold that value through their life, and then having to work more and having to suffer because their value is being inflated away or debased or whatever. So it's just kind of funny to think that in an ideal world, we'll have people like Elon Musk, like in a Bitcoin world, and he would be like, you know, one of the biggest things that is valuable in a world of free markets and capitalism and all that is being able to lead people and being able to influence people. And so somebody like Elon that has those skills, maybe he's not, he's a very controversial figure. A lot of people say he just rips people's ideas off and whatever. And you know, he like sucks up to the Chinese communist government to get money from them. And he just abuses like the carbon credit market and all this stuff. So whatever you think about him, like he's done, he comes from free markets and he's very successful at leading and influencing people. And if we can't even get him to sort of put the work into understanding Bitcoin, then like, how can we expect that the people that are against Bitcoin will eventually turn a leaf? And like, you know, influence and power is one of the greatest resources in the world, as well as Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin, I think in the next decades is going to become the up there global reserve asset with treasuries and dollars and gold and everything, probably surpass it one day. I don't know, a couple of decades, 3-4 decades, whatever it takes, it will probably one day be, I don't think the global reserve asset, but in a basket of assets that are looked at as global reserve assets, it's tens of trillions of dollars, maybe $80 to $100 trillion market cap, whatever it is, massive success, but still not everybody's a Bitcoiner and all the influential people and powerful people believe the same things that we believe and want actually to have people be sovereign. And you know, kind of a lot of people that want the power and the influence and the control, they want people to be asleep and they want them to be subservient and they want them to be afraid. They want them to be like listening to the news and scrolling Twitter and always being afraid of everything. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that's ever going to change.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I maybe want to play a little bit of devil's advocate with you, because I think that, you know, when it comes to manipulation and, you know, kind of swaying people, whether it's in the media and all these things, it causes a lot of groupthink, right? I mean, we saw it with COVID. I guess my only hope would be that we would have somebody in power that's potentially a Bitcoiner and, you know, thinks about self-sovereignty and that things and is able to lead and kind of, you know, push that narrative. And then that would cause a groupthink mentality of that, where everybody is trying to get to self-sovereignty. Now, I'm not sure. I haven't done too much I'm sure as much research into the back end of these things that you have, but do you think that's even a possibility of potentially like shifting the narrative that way? Or do you think, the groupthink is always going to be, I guess, in a negative light? Are you looking for the easiest way to get your Bitcoin off an exchange? Well, I've got it for you. It's Foundation Devices. They've got the number one hardware wallet in the Passport. They've even got a concierge service that can help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange within 1 hour private onboarding session. And they've got a great app too, which will give you extremely, extremely, extremely private features on that app, so you can use Bitcoin in the most secure way possible. So I've been working hard trying to get sponsors to help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange, and I found it with Foundation. And you can store your seed phrase with a stamp seed punch plate as well. So pair all those together, use promo code GreenCandle at foundation.xyz, and you'll get $10 off your entire order. All right, that's enough for me. Back to the show.
No, that's definitely possible. I feel like it's a tough endeavor to try to make it happen, though, because our entire money system is based off of inflation and consumerism and, you know, planned obsolescence and stock price rising and this Ponzi scheme of funneling money back into the value of the assets and selling more crap to make sure that your profits are above inflation, because you have to beat inflation if you're a company. Otherwise, you know, profits are your lifeblood for your company. If you're not beating inflation, you're atrophying. And so the only way in this current climate is just this horrible reinforcing cycle of creating more and more stuff at higher and higher prices that last longer or less and less long, and convincing people to take debt to borrow money to buy these things. And that cycle, that vicious cycle, is just continuing. And as long as we're in that cycle, then you can't like kind of change one thing. Everything has to change. Like it almost has to be a long depression and pain and suffering where everybody realizes that this Ponzi scheme doesn't work. And just because you're making more money, say, but your value of your money doesn't buy you as much stuff, and like the majority of people are not benefiting from this money system, if that doesn't kind of resonate with a lot of people at once, and we kind of like lobby the government or lobby companies, banks, et cetera, to change everything, then I don't think it can slowly change. I think the way that it's happening right now is the best we can hope for. Like the situation that we have right now, like the branch of reality that we're in right now, is probably the best outcome for Bitcoin in 2011. When I came into Bitcoin, it was like tall, so small. It was so small. And I thought I was like too late back then. I'm like, oh my God, it went all the way up from $1 to $10 this year. Like I'm too late. Like I'm not as early as Roger Ver, who was there like a month earlier than me when it was like $2. And I was like, what the hell? To now where it's like the freaking presidential candidates are talking about Bitcoin, and the biggest wealth managers in the world have Bitcoin, and the biggest tech companies in the world own Bitcoin, and they're talking about Bitcoin. This is crazy that we're here. And it's probably, like I said, the best outcome that we could have hoped for is this current reality. And it's just taking time. And if we can just kind of understand Bitcoin, understand money, and then harness to the train of Bitcoin's inevitability, you go up and down with it. But like, you don't really need to, I don't think, worry about it anymore. I think there's enough. There's enough people, enough amazing initiatives working towards protecting Bitcoin and growing Bitcoin that, you know, most people don't have to actually get involved in it. And like, if they have the capacity to do it, if you have the mental fortitude to deal with it, and you got like good like mindset routines and healthy routines and stuff, and you're not going to let it affect your relationships at home or your self-esteem or your outlook on life or whatever, then sure, get involved. But most people that get involved, it kind of just, there's so much negative stuff now. Bitcoin is kind of so big that it is also infected with identity politics, just like regular politics is. So there's like, you know, ordinals Bitcoiners, and then there's like sidechain Bitcoiners, and then upgrade Bitcoiners, and Bitcoiners that are traditionalists that want to see ossification, and then hardcore maximalists and monetary maximalists and platform maximalists, and then there's shitcoiners. And then in the shitcoiners, there's Ethereum maximalists and Solana bros, and you know, there's tons. So it's like, you know, if you don't want to get involved in all that crap, you don't have to. Like, Bitcoin's so successful right now. It's on this trajectory that's basically unstoppable, I think. It doesn't mean that I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna stop trying to do my best to help Bitcoin entrepreneurs and Bitcoin itself and donate to the amazing groups that are supporting Bitcoin and stuff like that as I can. But just the idea that like we need to do anything is I've just kind of been letting that one go over the last 5, 6 months. And it, man, it feels so good not to be stressed out about all the daily goings on in the Bitcoin Twitter shit.
No, I hear you on that. So, but what do you mean, like that we don't need to do anything? Like, what I want to dive deeper into that phrase there, because I think there could be a lot to unpack. Like, do you mean, like, I don't know, like worry about the minutia details that we've kind of been talking about, or is there something else that
I
you?
just honestly, I think all you need to do is learn about Bitcoin and hold Bitcoin and buy more Bitcoin. You don't need to be out there like a Bitcoin missionary spreading the word of Satoshi. If you don't, you know, just because you have Bitcoin doesn't mean you need to be spreading it. Now, a lot of people, they get the bug and then they're down the rabbit hole and they can't help it. That's fine. Do it if you want. But then a lot of people get too far down the rabbit hole and then they start getting involved in identity politics and the debates about the software upgrades and all this shit. Like 99% of us don't have any business thinking about what software upgrade happens on Bitcoin. Honestly, like we don't understand it really. We really don't. Most of us don't understand. It's like you just need, it's whatever happens. Like Bitcoin is a. This Bitcoin organism and the consensus mechanism of Bitcoin, this like distributed, weird, amorphous consensus group that like users have influence and miners have influence and companies have influence and developers have influence and holders have influence. You don't need to worry about Bitcoin, honestly. Like, I don't think people need to be involved in the Bitcoin, like the Bitcoin discussions and stuff like that. Really, what all people need to do is just get as much Bitcoin as they possibly can and help their friends and family get Bitcoin too, but if they want to do anything out extra. But for themselves, they just need to learn about Bitcoin and own Bitcoin and then become like invest in yourself and become a better version of yourself. Because if we're right, which I think we are, and Bitcoin becomes a global reserve asset and it's worth $1 million a coin or $10 million a coin or whatever it is, and we are the new power class in 10 years or whatever. I realized like early this year, I was like, I don't have the ability to actually build a citadel. Like if the meme came to reality, like I couldn't actually build a citadel. And so I started thinking just as a thought exercise, like what would I need to do to actually build a citadel? Now I don't have like enough coins to even be thinking about this, but it was just like a thought exercise. I was like, you know, let's say this is real, like all this stuff is going to happen and Bitcoin just becomes $10 million a coin tomorrow. Am I ready for that? You know, like what the hell would I do? So I just started realizing, like, and I'm saying this as a prescriptive thing, but really it's for me. It's my own advice that I gave myself and have been taking. Because some people just love being in the drama, you know. But I've seen it, like I'm sure there's a lot of people out there like me that it just clogs up your mind and makes you depressed and kind of makes your outlook negative, and you're always thinking about, oh shit, what is the Fed going to do? And like, oh my God, the war and the famine and all this shit. It's like not good for your own mental state. Me, anyways. So I realized like I don't need to do anything. Like I don't really. I used to think I did for a long time, and I was active and I was like involved in all these conversations and trying to go to all the conferences that I could and meet the people and whatever. It's just donating and all this stuff. And then I realized like, man, like, I don't like Michael Saylor and Jack Dorsey And like people like that, like Corey Clipston, like all these people that are like influencing hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. Dude, like every year we're going to get more of those. Like every cycle we're going to get more of those. What am I going to do? What the hell am I going to do compared to Michael Saylor? Like, I don't need to do anything. We got friggin' Jack Dorsey, Michael Saylor, and Max Kaiser and all these people. Like, seriously, what do I need to do other than just like become a better version of myself and own more Bitcoin and then try to help people around me and influence people around me to understand my perspective? That's kind of what I mean by we don't need to do anything. It's just like, really, you just need to make yourself better version of yourself. And then if you're like a superstar, then for sure you need to do something. We need the superstars to get to work. But most of us aren't like superstar devs or like, you know, Peter McCormick type people that can get like the number one Bitcoin podcast or whatever. So if you're not one of those people, you know, then just figure out what you need to do to get more Bitcoin and understand it more and help your friends and family and just live a happy life.
Yeah, and I think that's all like fair to say. And I think it's very freeing when you find Bitcoin. You know, I mean, you always see the meme of like the two people, like Democrats, Republicans yelling at each other. And then the guy off to the side, they're just thinking about Bitcoin and, you know, living their own life. So, but I mean, I think that another aspect of it too is like, you know, you were talking about like the Fed, what they're doing a lot in the macro situation. You know, I see it a lot with a lot of my friends in my age group where they're trying to find the next penny stock or whatever it is to have it shoot up, next meme coin, and they're stressing out over these things, right? And when I realize, like, yeah, you know, when I realize every paycheck, just put a little bit into Bitcoin and just DCA throughout the weeks and everything like that and just made it easy, you know, I didn't really have to put too much thought of it. I was able to, you know, do better at my job, have more creative, you know, stuff outside of it, you know, work better on these, I interview better and, you know, just have better relationships, just kind of like focus more on the life aspect things aside from like the money aspects of things. So I think, you know, I resonate a lot with what you were saying there, that it's just very freeing when you, you know, find all that and you get to that point. But I mean, you know, there also is, you know, the propaganda and other things that gets thrown in your face quite a bit too. So I could see it on the other side of things where you kind of get drawn in there. But, you know, since you kind of, I guess, escaped that aspect of it, you know, what is something that you felt that has like really changed your life for the better in that sense? Because everybody says, you know, Bitcoin changes you. Right. I mean, I've been following you for a little bit. I see you did the push-up challenge. You've been doing a lot of different things. So, you know, outside of, you know, your mental state, like kind of like habits, what other things have you changed that, you know, you don't know if you really would have gotten into because if it wasn't for Bitcoin? Are you looking for the number one place to find all the information you can about Bitcoin, whether it's price, whether it's hash rate, whether it's the latest up-to-date things outside of Bitcoin, whether it's nation state adoption, what have you? Well, I've got the place for you. Check out bitcoinnews.com. They've even got the number one newsletter in the game when it comes to Bitcoin because it gives you all the up-to-date information on every single thing that happened in the past week that'll come to your inbox every single Monday morning. You could sign up using this code right down here or this link. It's also in the show notes. So come join me and thousands of other people that are getting the most up-to-date information from bitcoinnews.com and their newsletter. All right, let's get back to the show.
Well, that's a tough one because it's like hard to say where I'd be right now if I hadn't gotten to Bitcoin. And I struggle with this one too, because I don't want to be unrelatable to people. I don't want to become the person that's like somebody looks at and is like, oh, of course that guy can do that because, you know, he got into Bitcoin early, or of course that guy can do that because he knows this or that. I have this thing where I always want to be relatable to the average person or the ordinary person that doesn't read white papers and doesn't understand monetary history and stuff like that. And I realized that a couple of years ago, after I had been like steeped in reading about monetary history and the banking system and like confronting some things I had thought I knew about money and banking, because of libertarians and Bitcoiners basically telling me the way that the financial system works, which was wrong. I'm glad I got down that rabbit hole of thinking that the fractional reserve system was real and the money multiplier system was real, because it really made me upset at the scam that money is. And I got, you know, radicalized by it and decided to get into Bitcoin. But then after I realized, like, oh, well, actually, that's not how it works. And I started getting into the, like, the plumbing of it and confronting, like, some assumptions I had about the money multiplier and, you know, reserve ratios and all this, like, stuff. And I learned about it. And then I was at a wedding and I started talking to this guy. He was talking to me about how he was trading some stocks and he wanted my advice on something. And I started getting into the weeds and he's just eyes glazed over. And a few times that trip, I had that situation where I was just so steeped in those conversations that when I would talk to somebody in the real world about it, they would just like instantly glaze over and they just weren't following me at all and weren't interested. And that kind of made me kind of realize, oh shit, like I have become unrelatable. Like I learned too much about the freaking plumbing of the Fed and the commercial banking system. And now when I try to talk about it, I'm unrelatable. So, and the same thing happened. Like I didn't read the Bitcoin white paper for the first like 8 years that I was in Bitcoin. I purposefully didn't read it. I was like, nobody reads white papers. Like I want to learn about Bitcoin from the perspective of a user of Bitcoin and a person that just has Bitcoin. I don't want to be like understanding the technology. Like most people are going to use Bitcoin won't ever understand the technology. So I came at it kind of purposefully from this like perspective of non-technical. I didn't want to know about it, like all that stuff. I didn't want to get too deep into it. And it didn't work because nobody listened to me anyway. So I realized that whether you're relatable or unrelatable, it's just kind of a not, it's not, doesn't matter really. Because if you want to influence people, I realized this one as I was doing some thinking and talking to some mentors that I have, I'm like about this issue. I'm like, I don't want to be flashy. I don't want to come across as like, oh, early Bitcoin guy. Now he's got this huge house and he's got a supercar and all this stuff. So I've been kind of just like living a middle class life while trying to educate people about my knowledge about Bitcoin and my confidence in Bitcoin. But then it's like, if I want to influence people, the most amount of people, then they need to kind of like see me as somebody that has been successful. So most people. So it's more about like, do I want to be influencing people is the question now, because I don't know if I want to be living a life of like public, like out there balling all out of control, you know, eating all kinds of gold flaked ice creams or whatever rich people do. I don't know if I want that life, but then if I did do that, I would definitely influence more people. So it's like kind of a double-edged question sword, whatever. It's like, do you want to influence a lot of people or do you just want to live a happy, healthy life for yourself and really like enjoy yourself? So like that is another thing that I've been thinking a lot about. And if I didn't get into Bitcoin, I probably wouldn't even need to think about that question because I'd probably be living in a box somewhere under the bridge or something like that.
Well, I guess I want to dive into that. Why do you think that, you know, maybe it's like the wealthy or like the flashy, the appearance of having money or being in that sense, you know, almost equates to more influence. I mean, obviously we have Michael Saylor coming in. Michael Dell actually just like, you know, he's been tweeting about Bitcoin a good amount and the mainstream media is starting to pick that up. So why do you think, I guess, it's more like maybe a financial success, you know, and the flashiness of it? Why do you think more people listen to those types of people opposed to just, you know, the average Joe? Is it because of maybe you can see the results sort of? What do you think the reasoning is behind that?
Yeah, it's the same as like, would you take fitness advice from a fat guy? You know, probably not. You know, if you see like Robert Breedlove giving you fitness advice, you'd probably listen. Because he's got a six pack and he's ripped and he's got huge quads and calves and looks great. So I'd be like, yeah, okay, I'll take some fitness advice from Breedlove. But then like that is, it translates to the financial world partly because of that just basic concept. But then also the thing I realized was the people that I would influence if I did keep wearing this like middle class camouflage and appear just like I was a knowledgeable like next door guy, whatever. The people that like, you know, I would still be, I would be relatable to them, but they likely have a scarcity mindset that would be hard to overcome, and they likely don't seek the things that people that have nicer things seek. Typically, I mean, I'm not saying this for everybody, but if you're somebody that is an entrepreneur and you're an entrepreneurial person, you've got your own podcast and you've got sponsors, or you got your own business and you're selling stuff or whatever your business is, you know, you've probably done some work on yourself. You've probably read some self-improvement books. Maybe you listened to Tony Robbins once or twice. Maybe you've got like a foundational, you know, think and grow rich style law of attraction or whatever thing that like opens you up to the opportunities and the idea that you can be wealthy and that you can achieve more, and you set goals, probably have a dream board or something. You think ahead, like, what do I want to be doing in 5 years or 2 years or whatever? And most, you know, so if you were just to generalize, like, yeah, most people that do that stuff would be fitting in the category of somebody that would watch a YouTube video or listen to a podcast of a successful person, because they want that. Whereas 90% of the people or whatever that are just normal, average, ordinary people that like work hard and then go home and kind of just enjoy chilling with the family and like watching sports or whatever their thing is, they don't do a lot of that self-improvement work. They're not really thinking too much about their investing or trying to become a millionaire or whatever it is. They're not striving, striving, striving. They're just like enjoying their friends and their family, and they probably got repressed issues that they're not talking about, and they're not working on it. That's just a generalization. But so if I'm trying to be like relatable to the average person, I'm probably not going to influence them anyways, because they probably don't want to change too much. They just want to live a life where they're not struggling all the time and living paycheck to paycheck. Like that's what. And so they need Bitcoin, but they're probably not going to listen, really, right? So we need the athletes and like the celebrities and like all the people that influence them through this propaganda system. We need those people to talk to the people that I was thinking, oh, I need to be relatable to. Because they're not striving to go find this podcast. They're not going to look for Peter McCormick's podcast. They're not listening to Michael Saylor or Jack. They don't even know who Jack Dorsey is. So yeah, if I want to talk to entrepreneurs and people who influence other people or have the potential to become an influencer of other people, those are the folks I think you need to talk to. I think we need to influence influencers and people who are striving. And so I kind of realized this year that, okay, if I'm just doing it wrong, because most people, if they look at my like life, you know, they probably just would look over me, which is what I was looking for. I was trying that. I was trying to do that. And most Bitcoiners do that, right? It's like good OPSEC. So it's just a thing of like, how do you influence people while still sort of having your privacy and, you know, all those issues? So I don't know how to do, I don't know the answer yet. I'm still trying to figure that one out, but I'm kind of like, that's why one of the reasons I locked my Twitter account a month ago, because partly it was like mindset poison. I realized the more I was disconnected from the day to day, the more I realized whenever I would go on Twitter, it would just be like bombarded with all this daily negative shit and all this drama and all the politics stuff that triggers me. And my mute list started getting so long. I'm like, why do I even go on here? So I stopped going on there. I only go on Noster once every few days to check things out. And then every once in a while, I'll go on Twitter if someone sends me a tweet, and then I get sucked in, and I'm like, oh, I can instantly feel it now. It's like a vice in my mind. Like I can feel the scarcity, like just squeezing in my mind. Like my goals start to get minimized, and I start focusing more on all this negative shit. So maybe not everybody's like that, but for me, I know that it is. So I don't know if I'm the person that should be influencing people in the end. So I don't know. I wouldn't mind influencing influencers, but I don't know if I want to be the guy, like a Peter McCormick style guy with like a million followers or whatever, dealing with all that shit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess from my perspective on that is like, you know, nobody above you is ever going to discredit what you're doing or hating on you. It's always usually the people kind of chirping from the nosebleeds, unfortunately. So, you know, but I mean, I get it. There is a lot of negativity out there, and I think it kind of roots from almost like I don't know if it's like if this is too corny to say, but it's almost like the fiat system where they're just, you know, stressed out in other aspects of their lives. You know, whether it's the inflationary aspect, they're stressed because they need to make sure that their wealth, you know, lasts and goes farther. So they're taking it out on somebody across the screen, or they're taking it out, just trying to find a little bit of a release, a little bit of a dopamine hit in there, whether it's shooting off a negative tweet or something like that, in order to get all that. But I agree with you too. Like, I don't know if that's ever gonna stop there. I think, like, even if we're into a hyper Bitcoinized world, that will never, like, I don't know. There's always going to be emotion, always going to be negatives and things like that. But I want to play a little thought experiment with you here on how you think we get to a hyper Bitcoinized world, because I see, you know, I guess kind of like two paths, like one kind of slow and steady, and it takes a good amount of time. Whether we get to like maybe a Bitcoin-backed currency or something like that, and then we just go into a full Bitcoin standard, or the current system kind of, you know, crashes and burns, and then, you know, we got to rebuild that back up. And then that's more of the gradually than suddenly kind of curve. So, you know, how do you see us getting towards a hyper Bitcoinized world, or have you given that much thought here lately? Are you looking for the best way to orange pill your friends and family? Well, I've got a way for you that's got a little bit of a nostalgia factor. I've got Bitcoin trading cards. They've got the Genesis pack. I've got an open pack right here sitting here where you can hand out a bunch of these cards with some great, great artwork. We've got Tyranny. We've got Fear, Uncertainty, and Doubt right here, the FUD card. So we've got a lot of great things to teach you a bunch of lessons about Bitcoin in the current space. And they've even got some cool things of cool people even doing some stuff in the Bitcoin space. I've got the Bitcoin racing card here, even signed by my boy, Chris Primetime McKenzie. So you can get all of that at btc-tc.com. Use promo code GreenCandle. You could get 10% off your entire order to orange pill your friends and family and collect some cool artwork of people that are doing some awesome stuff in the Bitcoin space and help spread that orange pill around the globe. All right, enough from me. Back to the show.
I mean, the most realistic scenario would be just gradually. I don't think a suddenly part will work for Bitcoin because, like I said earlier, most of the people that are in the positions of power are not the types of people that want to give it up to this better form of money, to be able to remove their ability to redistribute the wealth and like rent seek off the solution. So I think most of the solutions that are going to come from a collapse are going to be the same as what came before. It would be like the, you know, the FDR's New Deal in the 30s. It was suspension of all gold clause contracts and pegging the gold USD ratio so that they could issue more debt and redistribute wealth from the debt owners to the debt, from the debt holders to the debt owers, you know, from the rich people that owned the debt to the people, to the government. And then, you know, the government then redistributed wealth. And back then it was more palpable because wealth inequality was horrible back then. So it was like this was seen as a solution, as a good thing to change the money system. But they kept the dollar. The dollar, it was like a default, but it was seen as like acceptable trade-off because the rich people could give to help poor people. And then wealth inequality did get better after they did that, but that was 100 years ago, and like the wealth inequality was already kind of not great, and they could do it. Then in the 70s they did it again, but they did it with nations instead of rich people. It was like gold, you know, suspension of the gold redeemability window, which was a redistribution of wealth again, and kind of to Americans. And now it's like something has to happen. So there does need to be something soon, but they can't do, it seems like wealth inequality is again to the point where it was 100 years ago. It's horrible. And now it's they can't do anything to the to change the structure the way that they did before with gold, because it's not even really a factor anymore. So it's like the only way they can get out of this, it seems, to sort of save any face is to just do more stimulus and more exogenous like lending programs and debt forgiveness programs and all that, which will be kind of like another currency, like the currency basically reset twice already. This will, or three times if you include the Continental, and the four times if you include the greenback, because the greenback was the Civil War, was the Lincoln did an unconstitutional act there by creating the greenback to fund the Civil War. And they used to make fun of him for making the money press go burr, because it was like a mill. It was like a money mill. They would draw cartoon memes about it. The money press. So money printers always gone burr. They always try to redistribute wealth. They always try to make it look like it's like from the rich to the poor. But really, it's from the like rich to the powerful. And the poor end up always usually suffering in some way through devaluation of the currency or higher taxes or whatever it is. And now it's like sort of the only solution is more of the same. And then if there's a collapse, it's going to be like a global declaration of either war, currency war goes to real war, which is just same as historical what's happened before. Some currencies will win, some will fail, or a global acceptance of like in modern monetary theory where like they just keep putting adrenaline into the patient's body to keep it going. And I just can't see a reality where in the next decade that the Bitcoiners are going to be the ones that are in control of making the decision to like fix it properly. Maybe in a couple decades, like as Bitcoin gradually slowly becomes like this snowball rolling down the hill and just gathering more and more influencers that actually are great leaders. Michael Saylor is an amazing leader. Jack Dorsey, look at all the leadership skills he has to be able to do what he's done multiple times through these crazy, huge companies. People like that, as they glom onto the Bitcoin snowball, they're going to influence people who are in their teens and early, you know, 20s, that in 20 years, if they continue to be Bitcoin, you know, learning about Bitcoin philosophies and reading books about libertarianism, or not even libertarianism, just like what's right and what's wrong. And they develop a strong moral framework of how to do things. Then I'd be hopeful that like, okay, the people that are in power are Bitcoin influenced or Bitcoin adjacent. Well, then maybe we would come out of it with the proper decision. It would be your reality of what you're saying, where the people in power can then direct the propaganda to be like, you know, Millet or Bukele style sound money propaganda. But even, you know, like we've got an example here of this in Canada right now. Pierre Poilievre is a monetary historian. He's got a deep history, a wide breadth of knowledge around the follies of fiat money and the benefits of the free market and civil liberties. And he's given like scriptless 15-minute beautiful speeches to the House of Commons about money and about the problems that the government has created by printing too much money and relying too much on the debt. And the problems he's facing right now are just so big that he doesn't even really talk about it anymore. So he won the leadership on that message. He won the leadership. The way it works, you know, for people that don't know, is there's like multiple parties here in Canada. Then there's the prime minister. We don't vote for a president like Americans do. We vote for a party, for our MP who represents the party. And then there's a leader of the party. So the parties run leadership races. And Pierre Poilievre was running in 2022 and he got it in 2023, became the leader of the Conservative Party. And now he's just like Bukele and Millet, like the support for Pierre at this point is like 97%. It's not like 97% of Canadians, but the latest polling shows that there's a 97% likely chance that Pierre is going to win, the Conservative government is going to win a majority government in Canada. and we just had the Conservative Party take a seat in Toronto, which is like the fortress for the Liberal Party over the last 40 years. So Toronto has now turned, it's flipped, it's flipping. And you have this like great, it's awesome for Canada. I mean, Canada's in a real tough position right now, like freedom and civil liberty and financial literacy is just like horrible. It's all time lows. Debts are crazy. It's like 370% debt to GDP ratio, if you include public and private debt here. Housing market is just insane. It's so expensive to live here. And the support for the prime minister is plummeting. And Pierre's going to win. And he's a sound money advocate. He espouses libertarian principles. He has Bitcoin. He's owned Bitcoin. He's been on Breedlove's podcast. He's talked to multiple people about Bitcoin. Yet he needs to lead the whole country. And so the politically like proper thing for him to do is to just not talk about those issues that much anymore and just talk about the populist issues. So he's talking about things that are like crime and, you know, big, like large housing prices, criminals that are like getting released too much from catch and release programs, homeless people, drug addiction. Like he's talking about all these things, but he's not talking really about civil liberties, sound money, individual responsibility. Those are all the things he talked about when he was running for leader. And that's what he won on for the party race. But now that it's like the whole country he needs to appeal to, he's kind of muted on these issues. And he'll say it every once in a while as like a little nod to those of us that are kind of like respecting that. But I guess his polling or his strategist or what must be showing that like 90% of the people that are going to vote don't care about freedom. They don't care about free speech. Not really. They care more about the things that are daily impacting their lives. So that's what the, you know, that's, I think if the Canadian currency collapsed tomorrow, you know, when let's say next month Pierre Poilievre gets in, which he can't until 2025 because most unless Trudeau steps down, which he should and he might, but he's probably not gonna. If Pierre Poilievre got in like right away, right, and he was able to implement all these things he wants to do, the tower is already falling, like the iceberg's already scratched up against the side and it's too late to turn away. The best thing you can do is like sink a couple decks instead of 8 or 9. So there's going to be damage. And he's the perfect person in your scenario that would be like, wow, a sound money advocate, an individual responsibilities person. He can actually implement change here in Canada that's significant, like Millay is doing and like Bukele did. But it's probably not something he's going to do. Because like he will be politically crucified in this country and people will revolt because they don't understand. Like people just don't understand the problem. They don't want to understand the problem because they're so used to being propagandized to. They just think it's, oh, the rich people, it's the corporations. And that is changing. We're seeing it in the polls. Like people are it started off like people did not like Pierre Poilievre generally, but now it's like, it's so in your face bad that they're turning to Pierre Poilievre as a protest vote against Trudeau and starting to learn like, oh, this guy's actually not bad. Like the news used to make him out to seem like he was this right-wing Trump guy. And now it's like, you know, anybody that actually listens to him and sees his policies, which most people don't, they just listen to what they're told about somebody or some subject. Yeah. So it is slowly changing, and I think that's the best we can hope for. And I think it's actually great that we're getting that. And that is what the reality we're in. We are slowly rolling down the hill, gathering all these huge nodes in the network that are so impactful. And even though some of the people that we're getting on our side, like, you know, Silicon Valley tech icons or whatever, aren't like 100% Bitcoin maximalists, or maybe they're just Bitcoin friendly, pro Bitcoin, like Balaji, people like that. They love Bitcoin, but they also like shit coins and they like making money on scams, SPACs, and Ponzi schemes. Just even that, like the fact that we're even getting that, because now when these positions of power, you know, people talk to somebody like a Balaji or a Peter Thiel and they ask about Bitcoin, they're going to give them a good answer. They're not going to be like, oh yeah, ban all the shit coins or like shit coins are scams, but Bitcoin's the best. But they're going to say Bitcoin mining is like an important thing for our strategic future, and it's great for the environment and for green energy, whatever. So, dude, I think like the best thing we could possibly hope for is just the continued slow inevitability of Bitcoin, and then eventually we won't have to worry about a gradually then suddenly thing, because it will just be like gradually will eventually become the norm. It will become like everybody has Bitcoin. The properties of Bitcoin are understood. It's a like Mike like Bitcoin Tina used to say, which, God rest his Bitcoin soul. He used to say that Bitcoin is moving from a illegitimate asset to a legitimate asset to then a must-own asset. And I love that framing from Bitcoin Tina. And I think that's really what we're seeing happen. And yeah, there's price volatility, but like we're in the phase of Bitcoin is now a legitimate asset. And over the next 10 years, it's going to become a must-own asset. And so that's just for me, I think that's the best we can hope for. And we don't need Bitcoin to be the global reserve currency. It doesn't need to be the currency that fixes all the problems with money. It just needs to be an asset that all people in the world can hold if they have access to a computer, a phone, whatever, and the internet, that they can hold and protect their wealth. It doesn't actually need to get into the like halls of politics and central banking and replace any of that stuff. Governments don't have to fall, currencies don't have to fail. Bitcoin just needs to keep slowly rolling down this hill and gathering more and more people, like it's been doing for the last like 13 years, 14 years, or whatever. And I see that happening every day. That's why I don't need to look at the short-term stuff much, because every day, not every day, but every like quarter or whatever, you just see like more people owning Bitcoin, 0.1 Bitcoin and above. There's more mining hash power. There's more high net worth individuals owning Bitcoin. There's more countries bending the knee to Bitcoin in some way. ETFs now sucking in Bitcoin supply, and people inevitably that wouldn't have bought Bitcoin are now looking at Bitcoin as a legitimate thing and something they want. So the network's growing, the amount of people coming on to Bitcoin to own Bitcoin and hold Bitcoin is growing in self-custody and on exchanges. All of these things to me, it's just why bother looking at the short-term price? It's just if any of that stuff was like, oh shit, like there's not as many shrimp, we call them shrimps and sharks and whales and all that stuff. The shrimp numbers, the people holding 0.1 Bitcoin, like that's been declining for 6 months. Oh, that's concerning. The Google search volume is declining over like year to year. That's concerning. But if you look at Google search volume and all these things that like make me like think, okay, if all this stuff is so healthy and people want Bitcoin, they're learning about Bitcoin, who cares about the price really? Because the price is just a short-term thing. It's going to be, as more and more people buy this shit up, it's going to be worth more. It just has to. So I decided to disconnect from the short-term price stuff, the short-term news, the drama, all that stuff. And I'm feeling great about it. I should start doing my podcast again though. So thanks for inviting me on here, because I do love to chat about Bitcoin and Bitcoin stuff.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you're always welcome back. And you've been very generous with your time, Brad. So why don't you tell people where they could find you and yeah, maybe hear the revitalized podcast here pretty soon.
I'm actually mostly on Instagram these days, because I like I said, I took a break from Twitter. So you can catch me on Instagram at Brad Mills Can, where I frequently repost your videos. Great job on your Instagram game.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm trying to step it up a little bit. But yeah, Brad, thanks so much for coming on. And yeah, I'll shoot all that in the show notes as well. So everybody give Brad a follow on Instagram. So, Brad, thanks so much.
All right, thanks a lot. See you later.
Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger. Where I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.